morning.
Good morning, Chair.
Yes, I just wanted to test if I'm audible. We are left with 1 minute to... And at least I can hear you, Honorable Mbumza. And we'll start immediately. It's 9 o'clock. We will not wait for the others to join. I am told that it's only you, Honorable Mbumza, and Honorable Brink that are already in. But maybe now it's 9 o'clock. The meeting is open. Officially, I would like to welcome our guests from the Western
Recording in progress.
Provincial Government, as well as the Cape Town Metro, George Local Municipality, Matsikama. And I'm also informed there's also local municipality, but I think we'll correct ourselves as we proceed. I would like to welcome our guests as the Portfolio Committee for Cooperative Governance and Traditional Affairs. As informed earlier, present at the moment, it's myself, Honorable Mbumza and Honorable Brink. I'm sure other members might be in by now. But before we proceed, I think let's start by acknowledging or accepting apologies. If there are any apologies, Portfolio Committee Secretary. Portfolio Committee Secretary, any written apologies?
Good morning, everybody.
Yes.
There is an apology from Honorable Krunabal. Were we able to join the meeting today as he's having an exam? There's apologies from the Premier of the Western Cape, where the prying engagement, and that Minister Wenger will be leading the delegation from the province society. The apology from Mayor of the City of Cape Town. Sorry, Councillor. I know I'm one of the councillors. Mbandezi will be leading the delegation from the city. There's an apology from Minister. She has prior engagement and won't be able to join the meeting. There's an apology from DM Bapela for DCOG. DM Karimeng will be joining the meeting but will be leaving at 10 o'clock due to other engagements.
Thank you, I was saying Honorable, and she says she can't hear me. I'm not sure if it is me or her side. If there's anybody who can hear me, please indicate. Now let me welcome the delegation from the Western Cape Province, led by the MEC, We are called ministers, Minister of Finance and Economic Opportunities, accompanied by other ministers as well. I think when we allow you to speak, you'll have to acknowledge those people who are part of your delegation. Let me as well welcome the one delegated by the mayor as well. When that time comes for them to speak, they will have to acknowledge others. And but let me again allow from our guests, we acknowledge the Deputy Minister of Cooperative Governance, who is part of us here. And I'm sure there's somebody from the department who is also going to remain when the Deputy Minister leaves. Can I allow any further apologies, learning from the previous experience? Any further apologies? Now this one goes to all of us, whether it's delegation from the Western Cape province, the municipalities, and any further apologies? Somebody who might say, I'm going to leave early or something of that nature. Yes.
Good morning. I know that MEC Anton Bredal indicated that he needs to leave a little bit earlier. And then I also got a note from the CFO of the city of Cape Town. That's Kevin Jacoby. They've got some tech issues. He struggles to hear you. So he's trying for his tech people to sort it out. So that's the ones that I know of, at least from the Western Cape perspective. Thank you.
Okay. Well, I don't see. Oh, Honorable Wenga.
Good morning, Honorable Chairperson. Just to let you know that MEC Bredal is struggling to get online, but he's being assisted, so he should be with us shortly. And then a reminder, as per the note I sent through to the committee, that I too will need to exit the committee at 11 a.m. However, my colleagues will be able to assist going forward should the meeting still be in progress.
Okay, thank you. Honorable Mbomza.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chair, I would like to request to be released at 10:30. I have to say, Doctor, I'm not that well.
Okay, noted. I think the best is to start the meeting before it becomes too thin. Let me welcome you, Honorable Deputy Minister.
Chair of the committee. How are
you? Honorable Pesa.
I'm terribly sick. I have to see a doctor sometime at 12 o'clock. So I hope by that time we would have done with, as you can hear with my, I don't have strength. I'm suffering from chronic dizziness currently. So I would like to you to acknowledge that. Thank you, Chair. Respectfully.
Yes, no, I'm acknowledging the apology, and I hope the doctor will help you. Honorable Deputy Minister and members, let me welcome you and our guests as indicated. The Western Cape Province, I'm informed, was the first to be called by the Portfolio Committee on the 23rd of June 2020 to account on its COVID response plan. And I'm also informed this followed some interaction with the metros, seven metros. Out of that experience, it then emerged that metros were not competent to respond to all the questions that the portfolio committee was asking. Then the portfolio committee resolved to engage provincial governments as well. So this is a follow-up meeting on some of those issues after the audit, special audit report by the Auditor General and SIU investigation report. Critically, what you are interested in is not criminal offenses, but we would like to hear from you confirming them. But important for us is consequences, what is called consequences management, because it looks like when we engage the Auditor General, when we engage the law enforcement agencies, they think that we are not doing enough as government to do our oversight and making sure that people do account. So that is what actually is bringing us here. We are following after other provinces have come to the committee, and we are almost concluding this round. You might be the second last. So you are welcome, and there's only one item, it's presentation. And when I say one item, it's one item, many items, in the sense that we have resolved after experiencing not qualitative responses from the provincial governments when they must account about municipalities. Because we do have that authority to oversight the three spheres of government, we then resolved to call also the municipalities that were identified by the Auditor General for audit, so that they can take us into confidence as to what they are doing. So in other words, whilst we expect a presentation from the province, there might be some comments that must come from municipalities. Can I now allow the leader of the delegation of the provincial government of the Western Cape to introduce us to the presenters and whoever to make the opening statements, and I'm handing over to you to make sure that your presentation is coordinated properly. Over to you, Minister for Finance, Economic Opportunities. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chairperson. Good morning to you, and a very warm good morning to the members of the committee and the Portfolio Committee on Cooperative Governance and Traditional Affairs. My name is Mireille Wenger, and I'm the new MEC for Finance and Economic Opportunities in the Western Cape. Very happy to be joining you this morning as my maiden appearance before a National Assembly committee, having joined the executive approximately 3 weeks ago. I'm joined by my colleagues, the Honourable Provincial Ministers of Education, Mr. David Manier, and the Provincial Minister of Local Government, Mr. Anton Bredell. We also have on the line the Director General of the Western Cape Government, Dr. Malila. Good morning. We also have the Head Official of the Provincial Treasury, Mr. David Savage. Good morning. And we have Ms. Jolinda Gantana, who's the Deputy Director General of Governance and Asset Management for the Provincial Treasury, who is also on the line. Chair, we received a request from you on the 27th of May and from the committee to report on the management of COVID-19 funds and the implementation of AG recommendations and consequence management. We have prepared a consolidated presentation, which will be led by Mr. Savage and Ms. Gantana, and that will provide context, the PFMA audit outcomes. It will include funding received for the provincial COVID-19 response, some precautionary measures that were implemented relating to the PFMA, as well as departmental checks and balances that were instituted. We then move on to funding, expenditure, and precautionary measures implemented in relation to the MFMA. So with that brief introduction, Chair, with your permission, may I then ask the team from the Provincial Treasury to proceed to the presentation?
Thank you very much, Minister Wenger, and good morning, Chairperson, and honourable members of the committee. I'm not all that au fait with Zoom, so I hope everyone can see this presentation. If the committee secretary could just confirm.
Yes, we can see the presentation. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Yes. So as Minister Wenger said, my name is David Savage. I'm head official of the Provincial Treasury in Western Cape Government. This presentation covers the matters she outlined and attempts to respond to the committee's areas of interest. I think a bit of context to start with is that I read the reports of the AG again over the weekend, and there are relatively few matters that were raised in the audit, the special audit. And I think what that does is reflect the relative success of some of our governance control systems that were put in place not only over time in terms of our broader driving of adherence to sound governance practices, but also in the context of the national state of disaster. So we did take quite early measures to take precautionary steps to strengthen our controls to ensure compliance, but also to make sure that we had an agile response to the pandemic in the framework of the PFMA from a procurement and financial management perspective. Some of the main steps that we took were the establishment of a COVID-19 coordination function for the finance and SCM cluster to make sure that there was sound financial governance, procurements, and management that were requirements that were met in terms of the Disaster Management Act. So that was a very extensive and intensive program of engagements on a daily or weekly basis of surveilling what was going on in departments. But alongside that, we also established a Central Procurement Advisory Committee where we got our top financial management and supply chain experts across the province to be able to provide just-in-time advice to finance officials in departments and accounting officers as they tried to navigate their finance and supply chain management requirements through the course of the pandemic in what I'm sure members will recall was a very uncertain time with a lot of instability in the market for commodities that were required. We, alongside that, deployed our own logistics support and advisory teams, particularly to support humanitarian relief work in the province, as well as work on the procurement of medical supplies and PPE, which was one of the most unstable parts of the market at that point from a global perspective. So in doing that, in providing that support, we established a database for medical and non-medical PPE suppliers that allowed centralized management of governance requirements, tracking of supply and demand availability, tracking of lead times, benchmark pricing, and so forth, but also was able to manage queries and provide support, assistance, and guidance to departments, municipalities, entities, and also suppliers. Alongside that, we engaged, obviously, with National Treasury, particularly on certain exemptions that were required on particularly relating to compliance dates, for example, on submission of annual financial statements that were necessary to trigger the audit process, and around audit scoping matters. And alongside that, of course, engaged with our Provincial Auditor General in terms of their suspension of non-essential audit work until the lockdown was lifted. The net result of that, Honourable Chairperson, is that the Auditor General did not find any significant issues with the financial statements of any Western Cape government institutions. It found that they provided reasonable assurance in auditor speak that all transactions were free from material misstatements and have complied with relevant laws and regulations. Some of the audit outcomes are shown in this table, but I can confirm that those with those unqualified with findings, those findings relate to non-COVID 19 related matters. In the instances where there were irregular expenditures that that were identified, in other words, non-compliance with a particular aspect of the regulatory framework, there is a assessment process that is processed through a provincial condemnation working committee in the provincial treasury once they've been submitted to the department. That requires a submission to the provincial treasury's committee would require a confirmation that a determination test has been undertaken, its findings and recommendations have been understood, that an investigation of fraud, corruption, or any criminal conduct has been conducted, and if it's found, that criminal charges have been laid, the confirmation of any losses, if they exist, disciplinary action and other remedial actions to strengthen governance systems have been taken, and that those are required before the Condemnation Working Committee can fully assess any application for condemnation. Alongside that, of course, the Provincial Treasury looks at all Auditor General recommendations alongside departments and entities through a continuous program of assessing our findings and developing our assessing the findings, responding to them to develop our approaches to corporate strengthening corporate governance in the province. So when we look at the funding received for the provincial response to COVID-19, which was the subject of the Auditor General special report, a total of 1.36 billion rand was appropriated from the three main grants at the top of this table on the left hand side. A total of just under 1.3 billion was spent, or a little less than 95% was spent. The vast bulk of this was on compensation of employees. That would be particularly related to the hiring of contract staff to strengthen health services systems delivery in the province. And on goods and services, the large bulk of that was related to obviously medical commodities required to respond to the pandemic. So of the national of the funding in the last financial year, overall it came from national 832 million allocated in the main budget for staff, intermediate care facilities, testing, consumables, items such as PPE, communication, critical equipment and transport services for both staff and patients, and 156 million allocated through the HIV/AIDS conditional grant for the rollout of the province's vaccine program. Alongside that, from own resources, the province allocated for the 150 million to assist the department with the vaccine program, and 244 million in the adjustments estimates to pre-positioned resources in anticipation of the fourth wave, which was mainly sourced from funding rollovers from the previous financial year. And unspent funding at the end of the financial year has been submitted as a rollover request into the current financial year for the department's continued COVID-19 response. Primarily, though, all departments have been expected to reprioritize resources within their own budget. In terms of matters that were raised in the special audit at the provincial government level and the Department of Health, two transactions were identified for PPE for N95 masks at prices exceeding NT benchmark prices. On the one case, the transaction was actually cancelled before it was executed. On the second case, the supplier could only deliver 63,000 units, and these were for N95 masks, the contract was cancelled thereafter. It did lead to a potential loss of a little over 40,000 rand. because the department paid 64 cents per mask higher than the benchmark price. They are in the process, they are recognizing this as irregular expenditure and will be submitting an application to the provincial treasury around condonation in accordance with the steps that I outlined previously. That has not been received as yet, but is will be forthcoming. In the Department of Education, there were issues raised in terms of a range of product specification and procurement management weaknesses by the Auditor General in terms of the specification of masks, stock management of PPE in schools and PPE storage in schools. In this respect, the department has acknowledged that there were weaknesses in this regard and has now established proper systems to ensure correct needs analysis is done before PPE is procured in schools. It has instituted guidelines on inspecting and undertaking quality checks on PPE that is delivered in schools so that school managers are able to easily do that. A checklist for reporting on poor quality PPE so that these may be taken up in case where poor quality PPE is delivered. Guidelines on process controls and standard operating procedures and guidelines on storage space for PPE at schools. A second matter was raised in relation to deviations from the competitive bidding process in the Department of Education, where the department selected a preferred supplier to procure 2.6 million cloth face masks for school students at a value of just over 54 million rand without inviting as many suppliers as possible to bid before awarding the contract. The department indicated that given the urgency nature and quantities required in the box and an emergency procurement procedure in terms of its own SCM limited bidding and emergency procurement policy, but it is now treating the matter as irregular expenditure, which means that it will be, it is in the process of being investigated. And the evidence put together for a submission for condemnation to the provincial treasury as well. In addition, I think to the enablement measures that the provincial treasury and Western Cape government as a whole took during the pandemic to secure sound governance controls, we also undertook some additional surveillance and oversight enablement in the context of the disaster. So from a financial systems perspective, we made early adjustments to the basic accounting systems, credit score items, linking our logistics system to that to create the right project segments. Also in the health environment to make sure that the requisitioning, ordering and invoicing systems were capturing accurate and aligned information. Our e-procurement system was adjusted as well to allow recognition of COVID-19 related transactions and allowing us to then quickly surveil from the provincial treasury's perspective all COVID-19 related procurement transactions, the smaller ones that were occurring, and also allowed some flexibility for departments to lift the threshold on EPS transactions to ensure that they were able to respond quickly to commodity demands. From an audit, an internal audit perspective as well, our provincial audit committees approved recommended changes in internal audit plans to create COVID-19 projects for each department to allow internal audit to investigate and help to strengthen controls as well. Alongside that, we issued a range of guidance circulars, systems circulars, procurement circulars, and financial management circulars to enable departments to put in place common sets of measures and understand the common principles and our program regarding the management of disaster-related funding environment, and to ensure that all financial transactions, for example, including donations to Western Cape government departments and entities, were fully accounted, fully and transparently accounted for. So there were a range of measures, perhaps a flurry of circulars that were issued, and as always in the Western Cape, that's accompanied by extensive guidance and engagement with accounting officers and financial management officials to clarify the underlying intention and procedures associated with compliance with those circulars. And then alongside that, and given the fact that we had adjusted our financial systems to be able to closely track COVID-19 expenditures early, we were able to develop and publish monthly, quarterly, and annual procurement disclosure reports on COVID-19-related expenditures. This started out just covering PPE procurements, but expanded quite rapidly to all procurements in the province, and that was something that was then taken up by National Treasury in the national dashboard on COVID-19 related procurements. We then took that a step further in our quarterly and annual reports in looking at who were the suppliers in terms of preferential and other secondary procurement objectives and requirements. You know, where were suppliers located, how many SMEs and previously disadvantaged individuals and firms were involved in the procurement of R7 million that was allocated to municipalities in delays in decision making processes at municipalities. That was an area where that money was spent. Should just note that this is based on the reports from municipalities and not from a direct draw from the MSCOA of municipalities. So there is some incorrect classifications. Members will note, for example, in the case of Matsikama, a relatively high $177 million that's reported under general expenditure. We're drilling into that number. What that is compensation of employees, which is an incorrect recording of, it's not a direct COVID expenditure, but this is presented as reported by municipalities. In fact, Matsikama spending was closer to 2 million rand on direct COVID-19 issues. So this is a classification error in that case. Again, in terms of funding, municipalities.
Recording in progress.
There was no regular expenditure detected in this case. In terms of controls over deviations, questions raised over the use of competitive processes in procurement, and again, no irregular expenditure was detected in this case. And controls over the expansions of existing contracts, an issue was raised with a lack of consultation with contract managers, so a governance weakness, but no irregular expenditure itself was detected in that case. What I haven't, Chairperson, covered here is SIU matters. There have been SIU investigations in the province. There were two matters in municipalities that were raised in Matsikama and Cedarburg municipalities. In the case of Matsikama municipality, to the procurement of PPE, the Hawks have recently made a number of arrests in that case, and I think that those charged have appeared in court for a first time in the last 10 days. Thank you very much.
Honourable members, I'm informed that this was a consolidated report, so municipalities will only come in when there are questions raised. So this becomes the presentation for everybody. And in terms of the program, then this allows us an opportunity as members to make comments, ask questions, and I think I'm at that stage now where I'll take hands of the honorable members who would want to speak on the matters. I see Honorable Peza, you are number one. Honorable Matumba, number two. And Honorable Puteles, you are number three. Honorable Brink, number four. Can I take you in that order? And I think those will come in. I will take them as they come. Honorable Kweza.
No, thank you very much, Chairperson. Just forgive my voice. The capacity is not quite there. The first thing that I would like to, that I have interest on, is when the MEC for finance spoke in relations to the fact that there's economic opportunities in the Western Cape. I wanted to ask, in light of the fact that most of your rural municipalities, residents migrate to Cape Town or Johannesburg or even like Gqeberha as a result of the lack of economic activities in their areas of birth, what feasibility studies have you conducted to industrialize your rural municipalities' spaces, which will lead to employment and the improvement of revenue within the rural municipalities, thus closing the disparities between the rich and the poor in your province? The second one, Chair, was relating to human settlements. Section 152D of the Constitution presents us to say that it speaks about the promotion of safe and healthy environment. What measures have the department put in place in ensuring the eradication of street dwellers, given this prescript of the Constitution, in the city of Cape Town? And what are the time frames to deal with this? Because our view is that homelessness is indeed an asset for the spread of diseases, particularly as it relates to COVID-19. The other one, Chairperson, are there people who benefited from finance-linked individual subsidy program in the province who, in essence, were not supposed to benefit because of their income that was above the threshold of the intended beneficiaries? If yes, what is AXA doing about this? The other one, Chair, there has been recent promises by the Premier Ellen Wynne that the DA provincial government is committed to addressing the issue of spatial planning in the province, and that his government will support the building of social housing in the inner city. Because we know that most poor black people cannot afford the actual expensive cost of renting apartments within the inner city, and a greater percentage of their salaries are spent on transport to go to work in the inner city and the surrounding area. What is the envisaged project intended to achieve? Why has his government turned down an opportunity to develop Tafelberg property into social housing for the poor to address the inequalities and chronic disparities associated with spatial planning in the province? Municipalities generally struggled before the COVID-19 pandemic. It is now worse with the huge increase of unemployment, grant funds redirected away from the normal service delivery. What measures have the province put in place to assist municipalities with their service delivery challenges? As noted, non-payment of municipal accounts because of unemployment, decrease in revenue derived from rates and taxes. What mitigation plan does the province intend to implement in this regard? In that slide, just before closure, they speak about the detection of non-compliance in selecting and approaching existing suppliers, premiums beyond benchmark prices. And then they speak about they say follow up, then they speak about the discipline. Now, what is the nature of those disciplinary actions that have been taken against one official? The forensic report of prizes conducted, disciplinary action taken against the two officials. What is the nature of those two officials, and where are they located within the municipality? Exactly. In which department? Regarding the recently concluded forensic investigation into water supply for informal settlement, which found that the city was overcharged, what is the name of the supplier and the amount involved? What action has the city taken against the supplier besides referring to it to the matter to the MPEC? And then municipalities and provincial government having reallocated grants and funding to counter the effects of the COVID-19 pandemic. How does this impact on current and future normal municipal funding and effect basic municipal service delivery? Was analysis done on such an impact? Have you already analyzed how it should impact current, given the fact that during COVID-19 everything has been redirected? I think I will park it here, Chair, and excuse me for my voice, and thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Matumba.
Morning, Chair, and thank you very much for this opportunity. Chair, first of all, I would like to say, you know, it's very much difficult to speak on this report because it is not complete. It doesn't give us a proper picture for us to do oversight. It doesn't at all. Chair, unfortunately, it doesn't even have numbering, so I can't say let's go to this page, but there's a page that speaks of precautionary measures implemented on Municipal Financial Management Act. And the last but one paragraph there, it says the province, it says instances of irregular expenditure had to be addressed by municipalities in terms of their own policies and through MPEC structures. Chair, the issue of irregular expenditure is dealt with using a uniform approach, which is Municipal Financial Management Act, Section 32. So it doesn't speak of any policy from the municipalities that they have their own policies of dealing with irregular expenditure. So it means all municipalities in South Africa must adhere to Section 32 of Municipal Financial Management Act and use it to deal with irregular expenditure. Now, I would like to know, what do they mean that the municipalities will have to use their own policies? Because in accordance with Section 32, municipalities are even compelled to report to the provincial government on irregular expenditure. So they should have been having a report that these are irregular expenditures that took place. These are the actions that the municipalities took through the act, and not with this thing of saying they have their own policies. So we would want to know, where are the reports from the municipalities on irregular expenditures? Now, Chair, I will go to special audit matters, City of Cape Town. Even there, there is no proper picture, Chair. You know, if I have the powers, I was going to say these people must go back and give us a proper report. In fact, that is my proposal, Chair. Now, it says with water supply for informal settlement, it will tell you that referred to forensic investigation. MPEG considering recovery of overcharging. Even now, it will then take you back to what I was saying there, that it is section 32 subsection 2 of Municipal Financial Management Act that says the municipality must recover. So it, what I do not understand is where does MPEG come in there to say MPEG is considering? Because MPEG, we don't know what MPEG is doing until MPEG gives a report to council and say this is our division. Now, when we say MPEG is considering, it means we now know what the decision that MPEG is going to take. And then, therefore, it means the MPEG that we took the matter to is no longer independent, because we even know the decision that they're going to take. Hence, we have section 32 subsection 2 that says a municipality must recover unauthorized, irregular, or fruitless and wasteful expenditure from people that are liable. So what we want to know from water supply for informal settlements, the report should have been telling us there is irregular expenditure, these are the people who are liable, and this is the decision that was taken by council to recover on overcharges, not MPEG considering considering recovery of overcharging. The report itself gives us a different picture of MPEG. It also says referred to forensic investigation. Now, Chair, we also have at the PPE procurement day, it will tell us disciplinary against one official linked to contract. We don't know what did this official do. How was this official involved? Again, it will tell you forensic investigation of prices conducted, reported to National Treasury and Competition Commission, disciplinary action against two officials. What is happening with disciplinary action against two officials? What is the picture then? We want to do oversight. Disciplinary action against, was disciplinary action taken? Are you planning to take disciplinary action? What is really happening? In terms, Chair, my submission is that in terms of the City of Cape Town, we must have a thorough report. What we are getting in terms of City of Cape Town is not a report. It doesn't speak anything that we can do oversight on. There's nothing they can be accountable on, because they are not saying anything to us. I'm even giving you example here. MPEG considering recovery of overcharging, disciplinary action against two officials. So I'm proposing that the City of Cape Town must come with a proper report only for the City of Cape Town, because there's nothing currently here. Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Mutelezi.
Thank you, Chair. There are serious concerns regarding the suppliers that were used for emergency procurement. For example, there's a supplier called Top and North CC, which is listed multiple times. However, this supplier was blacklisted by Treasury as per the media report dated 12th July 2017. So my question, therefore, is how then did the Top and North CC get these multiple contracts with the City of Cape Town? And several of the other service providers listed do not have websites or information available about the services that they offer. However, so how were these service providers selected as well? My third question is, a supplier called SimNet House received multiple contracts. One contract alone worth 3,728,745 rand, and this service provider has no website and references to a company with this name online describe this company as being part of the residential building construction industry. If this is indeed the case, Che, how then do they get such large contracts for emergency meals / food parcel procurement? Thank you, Che.
Okay, thank you, Honorable Brink.
Thanks very much, Chair. I am interested in the procurement disclosure reports, and I think that the Western Cape was probably the first province to use this device, although disclosing your procurement is part of the PFMA and the MFMA. But these, I just want to know specifically, these procurement disclosure reports, were they limited to PPE related goods? And secondly, did you as decision makers, especially the politicians and the executives or the members of the executive, did you find that they were a useful device in making decisions or exercising meaningful oversight over the administration? Just those two questions. Thanks very much, Chair.
Thank you. I think I'm noting the one member here. Oh, it's the DM who is joining the select committee. Now, this is the opportunity for responses. Like I indicated earlier, the coordination of those responses should also be directed in the sense that the leader of the delegation for the province must as well allow municipalities. Can we respond now?
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson, and thank you to the Honourable Members for their questions. I'll respond on some of them and then I'll ask some of the colleagues that are joining the delegation to respond to others. The first question from Honourable Tulisa on rural economic development. I wear two hats. The first one is finance, and that is the capacity in which I'm appearing here today. But I also have the economic development and tourism hat that I wear in the executive. And part of our rural economic development strategy is to promote tourism, energy resilience, and then, of course, investment promotion. So we actually have a district unit within WestGro, which is the Western Cape's Tourism and Investment Promotion Agency, which specifically focuses on promoting investments outside of the metro and in the Western Cape more broadly. We are looking at energy resilience and projects being developed throughout the province because we know that energy resilience will help drive job creation. We also, from the provincial treasury side, produce the Municipal Economic Review and Outlook, which is a yearly analytical document produced by the provincial treasury, which looks at economic activities and investments happening in municipal areas. which is a great tool in helping to promote and foster economic development in other municipalities outside outside of the metro. Then what I will do is I will ask either the DG or colleagues from local government to respond to the questions on spatial planning. The detection of non-compliance, if I could refer to the colleagues from Provincial Treasury, and questions on water supply in the city of Cape Town, either local government or colleagues from the city. Then the questions from Honourable Matumba on the MFMA and the special audit, if I could ask Provincial Treasury to respond to those. Honourable Buthelezi, the questions on service providers, perhaps if local government or city colleagues would be able to respond there. And then Honourable Brink's question on the procurement disclosure reports. The aim of those procurement disclosure reports is, in effect, to promote and increase transparency and also to allow for scrutiny. So they've helped us to strengthen transparency and public oversight of our government spend in respect of disaster-related procurement. They've also created an opportunity for departments within the government to implement mechanisms to make improvements to the quality and credibility of the data and information in respect of COVID-19 expenditure. Initially, the procurement disclosure reports did focus on PPE, but the scope of the reports was, in fact, expanded to include all disaster-related procurement. And this approach by the Western Cape Provincial Treasury was subsequently adopted by the National Treasury, so it is a good best practice in this field. Let me then hand over to, let me start with the Director General, the DG, if you'd like to respond to any of the questions. If not, we'll hand over then to Provincial Treasury. Thank you.
Mr. Wenger, thank you very much. I take it that I'm audible. I mean, I can definitely confirm that particularly during the COVID period, these reports definitely assisted the executive. And in fact, Chair, we had an entire system in the province around managing COVID. And then obviously, you know, when all these issues sort of popped up elsewhere around, you know, fraudulent transactions in the system, irregularities within the procurement system, we took a decision. I mean, that's the executive, you know, that we want to be transparent, we want to be open, and we want to make sure that there are no issues in our procurement system. And the Treasury in our province led the process, obviously with the support of the respective departments. And therefore, you know, if you look at the Auditor General report, and I think actually David Savage highlighted it, you know, we did not find, or the Auditor General did not find any major issues with regards to the way that we went about, you know, procuring, you know, particularly some of these PPE issues. So, Chair, I want to also indicate that obviously when we were involved during the COVID period and all these procurement issues took place, we met with the municipalities at least on a weekly basis. We had a structured approach. We called it an extended cabinet. And I mean, the Premier at almost each and every of these meetings highlighted the fact to municipalities that the procurement processes need to be clean, it needs to be open, it needs to be transparent, notwithstanding the fact that we were dealing with a disaster at that point in time. Chair, in relation to spatial planning, I mean, we've got a department responsible for planning and environment. We also have some planning capabilities in the Department of Human Settlements. We do this given the legislative requirements together with municipalities. And in fact, all the issues around planning, spatial planning, is built into the strategy of Western Cape Government. So if you go to our provincial strategic plan, particularly our priority four area, you will see that there's a specific dedicated space where we talk about the environment, but we also talk about the issue around spatial planning. And spatial planning is more than just, you know, planning for human settlement. It also includes economic opportunities. It also includes the issues of mobility. It includes also planning around other public services like hospitals, schools, human settlements, etc. But we can't do this on our own. We actually do the work together with municipalities. Chair, I mean, you're well aware. I mean, we are battling, I think, as a country with regards to improving opportunities for people, getting people closer to economic opportunities. And that, in fact, is the function of spatial planning. I mean, spatial planning has also got an economic function, so you bring people closer to working opportunities, then obviously you reduce the travel time, you reduce the expenditure in relation to public expenditure for transport, et cetera, et cetera. And that's one of our objectives of Western Cape government. We want to bring people closer to economic opportunities through our spatial planning regime and through all the initiatives that we are running in the province. So yeah, I think that's it from our side. I will now hand over to David Savage, Minister Amwe, if you agree to that. And then I think after David, we should probably give also an opportunity to Kevin Jacoby, who's the CFO. But before I hand over to David, I see Minister Bradgal, who's the minister responsible for environment and spatial planning. I just wanted to check if Minister Bradgal maybe want to say anything further. Then Minister, then I can hand back to you, Minister Wenger now. Minister Bradgal?
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson and members of the Standing Committee. Thank you very much. Thank you for the opportunity. Yeah, just briefly on spatial planning, we will also take to Cabinet within the next 2 weeks. We've developed an inclusionary housing policy. I think I do think Gauteng's got one, but I think we will be the second province that present an inclusionary housing policy. We do understand the mobility issues within our province and that people struggle. So we definitely is part of our policy going forward. We've also done a housing market study for our municipalities. That is also especially focused on our secondary cities to help them to understand the housing market. We do have an ongoing struggle with revenue enhancement. We've done a lot of work on revenue enhancement to help municipalities to understand the billing system, to understand that there's still people that can't pay, that don't contribute towards, and at the end of the day, it's a balancing act to get subsidies going throughout the system and to support our households that cannot pay for services. And then we've done also a very important study, a growth potential study for towns, focusing our resources into the economic space in that town that will help to grow the economy in that specific town. And we've got 30 municipalities. Each one's got a unique selling proposition. And how do we focus on that? And how do we join our resources to build that out within those specific towns? So we in conversation and in discussion and in debate with our municipalities on that. So I will leave it there, but we're busy with working on a daily basis with our municipality on their spatial planning and inclusionary housing policies. Thank you.
Mr. Winger, may I proceed?
Thank you very much, Mr. Savage. Please do.
Thanks. Yes. So just on that question on in terms of rural municipalities and urban growth, just to note that, of course, in the Western Cape, growth is not confined to the city of Cape Town. There's actually faster rates of growth occurring in the Southern Cape. George municipalities, and also in some of the Cape Winelands area, Overberg, Witzenberg, and so forth. So that our strategy is very much adjusted to municipalities across the province, not just city of Cape Town. When it comes to the question of human settlements, there was obviously a dramatic rise in homelessness in the course of the pandemic. There have been response measures by the provincial government as well in terms of the expansion of homeless shelters and the conversion of some provincial buildings, which is currently underway in this current financial year, to expand the number of beds in the central city area, for instance, to provide to provide shelter for homeless people. That works across alongside, of course, our normal human settlements investment programs, our informal settlement upgrading programs, and what Minister Bredell has mentioned in terms of inclusionary housing programs. In relation to the FISP subsidy, irregular beneficiaries on the FISP subsidy, I'm not aware from the provincial treasury perspective of any irregularities that have been identified in the Western Cape in that regard. We haven't picked that up I don't think Auditor General has picked that up either at this point. I'm not saying that it is not a risk, but I think it is a risk that's quite closely monitored and managed by our Department of Human Settlements in that respect. We do also have a growing portfolio of social housing projects in well-located areas, particularly in the city of Cape Town, that the province is developing. This works alongside efforts of the city. The Conradi project is one that is nearing completion now. I believe some beneficiaries have already occupied units there. There are a range of others in that portfolio that are on various stages of preparation, including, for example, the Artscape project in the central city, amongst others. The Tafelberg matter, I believe, is still under litigation, but I stand to be corrected in that respect. It's by no means the only affordable housing or affordable social housing project that's under development or consideration in the province. In terms of the measures to assist municipalities with their service delivery challenges and their fiscal challenges, we obviously did work with municipalities right from the get-go, as the DG had indicated, meeting very frequently with municipal managers and other senior leadership. From the provincial treasury side, our focus was on financial stability, encouraging municipalities to take early measures to contain unnecessary expenditures and to protect revenues where appropriate, while taking due cognizance of the pressure that households were under during the period. So steps there included the development of a vulnerability monitoring dashboard for our most vulnerable municipalities, which tracks high frequency financial performance data so that we could see on a regular basis income and expenditures of those municipalities. Those that were vulnerable, as I mentioned, we worked with them to develop budget funding plans where they could constrain expenditures where they weren't required in the context of the pandemic, but making sure that services could continue to be delivered. And then we integrated that with our regular semi-annual budget engagements. Alongside that, worked alongside efforts by the Department of Local Government in terms of Section 154 support to Audubon municipalities, and there are integrated programs of support that through the Provincial Treasury, the Department of Local Government, and other departments in the provincial government, such as Environmental Affairs and Development Planning, where we agree on areas of support for municipalities, which can cover service delivery, financial management, revenue management issues that are provided in the course of every year. And so those are reviewed and extended every year, developed every year. In terms of an integrated support strategy for municipalities in the province. And I think that was particularly useful in the course of navigating the pandemic. I think what was most useful, of course, was the ability to meet frequently with our municipal leadership and discuss issues of mutual concern, and then individually in the cases where they were facing very specific challenges that needed a response. I think it goes without saying, we haven't presented the detailed data here, is that all municipalities faced financial pressure during this period. It was also a period where wage increases from the negotiations with municipal unions came through as well, which were above inflation at that point. And that placed some pressure on municipalities as well that they had to navigate during that period. On the question of irregular expenditure in terms of Section 32 of the MFMA, the member is absolutely correct that there is a regulated process in terms of Section 32 that deals with irregular expenditure, and that is complemented by the financial misconduct regulations issued in terms of the MFMA. Municipalities do report irregular expenditure to the province. What we haven't done in this report, because we confined our report to the matters in the special audit, was report on all of the irregular expenditure that has been reported by municipalities to the province and the follow-up actions that have been taken in that regard. But as the member would know, Section 32 does require the municipalities to take that action, and that the province plays an oversight role in that regard to make sure that is happening. And I'm sure that the City of Cape Town will report on what is in more detail on the steps in each of the matters that were raised in the special audit. And then I think just finally from my side, with regard to the procurement disclosure report, I think members are absolutely correct that there are standard requirements for disclosing contracts awarded. What was unusual in the context of the, what was innovative in the context of the procurement disclosure report is that we were reporting on expenditures across departments on an integrated basis on a specific set of procurements related to the disaster response. And we provided information on, for example, the unit costs of individual purchases, individual contract purchases, against benchmark prices where those prices applied. So they certainly did help with oversight, and they did help to focus the attention, I think, of procuring entities in making sure that they achieved the benchmark, at a minimum, the benchmark prices, despite the disruptions in the market. And when in cases where that wasn't achieved for one reason or another, there's a clear process of follow-up in that respect, as the case in the Department of Health. I think that covers the issues from the provincial side, and I think there were then a range of questions that were asked in more detail on the transactions in the city.
Thank you, Mr. Savage. I wonder if colleagues from the city government would like to respond at this stage.
Yes, Merrily. Oh, yeah.
Thank you, Councillor Mbandezi. Please go ahead.
Okay. Thanks very much, Chair, and the members of the committee. Thank you for this opportunity to represent the City of Cape Town. My name is Siseko Mbandezi, Mayoral Committee Member for Finance, and I am joined by our Chief Financial Officer, Mr. Kevin Jacoby, who would be able to deal with the detail of some of the questions that were asked. But I just want to respond to a few questions that were also asked. One around the issue of the homelessness in the city and the CBD in particular. The Mayor Jordan Hill Lewis is dealing with that matter, and I understand the frustration that the member was expressing, but I think the rise in the number of homelessness in the city was exacerbated by the COVID-19 regulations, and now with the lifting of that, the mayor is taking the matter forward to try and deal with it appropriately, because the city has safe spaces available for people who are homeless. So that one is being dealt by the mayor. David has also covered very well the issue of social housing and inner city development, and I think also has covered Honourable Member Matumba from EFF I think David has covered that, and Kevin can also respond if it's necessary. And then Honorable Buthelezi, I'm not sure in terms of your top and the company top and nose whether it will be able to pass the supply chain process scrutiny if it was barred from doing business with government. But I do know, I do remember seeing a press report around it where I think they've won the case in a court of law. So I don't think that there's anything irregular in doing business with them. Whether a company should have a website or not, the CFO will respond to that, whether it's something that we measure to get into a business with a company in the city, whether one must have a website or not. If you don't have, then you won't be given an opportunity. I'm not sure, but the CFO will deal with that. I think that's about it, Chair. CFO Kevin Jacobi, if you are able to respond further in detail to some of the questions, you are free to do so.
Chair, may I proceed?
Yes. Yes.
Morning, Chair, and morning to all your honourable members. My name is Kevin Jacobi. I'm the Chief Financial Officer for the City of Cape Town. Being part of your committee, we feel very welcome here this morning. And just to express my appreciation for that combined presentation by David Savage earlier on. Chair, I must admit, when we were given the questions and the opportunity to present here today or be present here today, I have all of those memories around what March 2020 and especially the end part of March 2020 looked like. And being a chief financial officer for a number of years, one of our focal points that we had is in 3 years' time, when we assessed, what do we look like? And that is one of the reasons why, the City of Cape Town, and like many other municipalities, we still believe that although we were in crisis, although we would experiment with every component of our SCM policy, as we do continuously as a city while delivering services, is that we would always install a good set of governance principles and so forth within the city. And I think, I went and asked the inventory controllers within the city how many PPE items were issued since March 2020. And I got the total of 16 million items up until date had been issued related to PPE. And that is a remarkable system that one has to have to keep that going during a time of a crisis, especially when we had comeback periods at different phases and we had different waves of the pandemic as well. So different levels of urgency in a market that saw a lot of opportunity. So, Chair, we established, and I hate to use this acronym, almost a procurement war room. We were very fortunate as a city in that we had a number of contracts in place that we could procure PPE from, but we didn't escape the understanding that we would have to approach the market, especially because of volumes and items that we hadn't thought of while entering into contracts outside of the pandemic. So coming to the specific questions, Honorable Tresa asked a question around the two officials, and that also came up with Honorable Mutumba. The two officials relating to the overpricing that was on three different products was N95 masks, disinfectants, and gloves. They weren't big contracts. However, there was overpricing between 131% and 2,000% at that time. It was in particular in the wave four part. The two officials, that wasn't included in my detailed report that I did submit, but the two officials did leave the city. They were under forensic investigation. Our standard operating process is that once we found overpricing through the controls that we had, we would report the matter to our forensic side because we must take responsibility for our own staff and exercise consequence management, but that we would also exercise consequence management over those organizations that overcharged us. The one organization came back and indicated to us that their loading prices that they were charged were also high, so that they shifted onto the city because of the demand at that stage. we didn't hesitate, but to still report the matter to National Treasury and the Competition Commission, who have access to many more tools than the city to test overpricing, considering the volatile market that we're exposed to. So just as far as the two officials are concerned that were part of our controls that didn't report this matter up when it was required, the forensic investigation reported that they should be accountable for the higher pricing accepted. And both those officials consequently have left the city. They were both, the question was asked in which departments they were by Honorable Matumba. He asked the question, and I can confirm that they were both in the supply chain management component of the city. The one was in inventory management and the other one was in procurement. And I reassure you for the second time, they're no longer working for the city. If there is a case to be answered at the level of MPAC on this matter, of course, we will then still pursue a recovery. So on the other matter that arose is the matter of water supply. The question was asked, and if you don't mind, because both politicians asked the question around water supply, so I'll deal with it collectively. The city was overpriced by 1.724 million by the service provider. This was identified during the course, obviously, by the during the audit of the Auditor General at the City of Cape Town. We're not trading with the service provider at this particular point, and we don't intend to until the matter has been finalized by MPAC. We are convinced via our own forensic reporting that an irregular expenditure did take place. That's why we have stopped. In fact, it's classified as wasteful expenditure, and I can confirm that the water service is working with our legal service at the moment on the recovery. So we're not waiting for the MPAC consideration. The reason why the comments, and the Honorable Matumba picked this matter up, why the word considering by MPAC was used, is because I never want to be, as an official, in a position where I preempt the thought pattern of an MPAC process. That is a process where the recoverability is investigated, and I respect that particular component. I can confirm to the Honourable Member that it is scheduled to be considered by MPAC on the 28th of June. Of course, then I would know their outcome. But I can certainly tell you, as officials within the city, when we are aware of wasteful expenditure, we are in any case moving directly for recovery from the company itself. And I confirm again that we're not trading with that company as we speak. And we haven't been trading with that company since the finding has been made available to us. However, there's also an internal question that needs to be asked, and that is the staff that were controlling that particular contract, what happened to them. I can confirm that there is consequence management taking place by that particular line department or line directorate. Then there was questions by Honorable Buthelezi. Topinos, you're quite correct, was blacklisted by National Treasury. Their blacklisting was for a period of 1 month, and that was in 2019. There was no reason for us not to use Topinos during the time of procurement of PPE. I can also confirm to you that in part of our standard procedures, of which we didn't relinquish during the time of the pandemic, was confirmation whether the companies were on a blacklisting or blacklisted by National Treasury. This has to be because we would have not have known if national companies in other municipalities were creating havoc with regards to the pandemic acquisitions. So it's part and parcel of our test in order to ensure that we do spend government money, local government money and so forth with reputable companies when providing us with a value service. On website, that obviously some research has been done by Honorable Buthelezi, but there's nothing that restricts us from doing work with a company that doesn't have a website. We have a particular compliance checklist. And the important thing for us always is the deliverable and whether they're able to deliver and, of course, the fair pricing and so forth. So also with regards to, I'm almost sure Honorable Buthelezi referred to a company that would have been acknowledged within the building industry. If we were just all recall at that stage that there were various suppliers re-engineered to be able to provide PPE during the time of pandemic. And of course, I would suspect that that is as a result that many companies felt the pressure and that they had to re-engineer themselves for the market and saw opportunity. The focus of the city was that it needed the PPE, and it had to be a fair pricing. It had to have staff servicing the public, and there's nothing wrong with obviously procuring as long as the product can be provided. I think I've answered all the questions. I can be reminded if I've left one or two out, but that's what I wanted to share at this particular point. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. I hope there's no outstanding matter. We can only allow now members, if there's anything we have missed, if there are any follow-ups on the questions that you raised after receiving the responses. Can I take hands? The first one is Teza, Honorable Teza. Can I allow you, Honorable Teza?
No, thank you. Thank you very much, Chairperson. My question with regards to the Embassy of Finance spoke to the industrialization of your rural municipalities in terms of the forced migration, because at some point your then Chairperson Helen Zille spoke to fellow South Africans who are traveling or migrating to Cape Town as foreigners. Now, how is it that you are ensuring that there is a massive development of the rural municipalities, your own rural municipalities, so that these things of calling people foreigners while we are in a country do not manifest again? Because we are of the view that in order to bridge the wage gap between the rich and the poor, some industrialization, some special economic zones must be adhered to, must be developed consciously and deliberately by a willing government. So mine is just about industrialization. What is it? And apart from that, just the time frames in terms of the plans that they are talking about there in the MEC for finance. And I didn't hear the question of the de-densification of Danone and Kosovo, which is not completed to date, Chair. A project which was supposed to have been completed in the 2019-2020 financial year to mitigate against the spread of COVID-19. I didn't hear that coming through, Chair, unless my thought process was disturbed by something that came across me when I was listening. I think those are the two, Chair. Thank you very much.
Honorable Matumba.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. I'm taken aback. Chair, I get it from the homelessness due to COVID. You know, I don't understand how, because did COVID take homes from these people and there was a rise? What COVID did was to expose homelessness in Cape Town, Chair. Because COVID forced all of us to go home. And it showed that in Cape Town, there are a lot of people who do not have homes to go to. So the rise was not due to COVID. COVID just exposed a situation that is already there. Now, we are told municipalities to take action. Now, the action must tell us. It must not tell us something temporary. It must tell us that we have allocated land and this is where we are going to build for these people. And Chair, what Honorable Kaza is raising is very much key. The issue of homelessness will continue to occur because where our people are, there is no economic activity, and therefore they must go to town to work in town, and in town they must find a place to stay. Only those who work in offices and those who have formal work are able to get a place to stay. But those who go for informal work and all those things, they don't have place to stay. Now, lastly, Chair, I thought we were going to get a sincere apology from the city of Cape Town for the way they were evicting our people during COVID. I mean, evicting a naked man in front of cameras. I thought there was going to be that apology, and I thought they were going to tell us what did they do to restore the dignity of that African child. Because, I mean, that man was stripped of his entire dignity. And it's something that we should have been told here in this committee, that this is what we did as an apology to that man. This is how we are apologizing further. And these are the steps that we are going to take, that that thing doesn't happen again, Chair, in democracy, Chairperson, to see an African man, entire African man naked, being pulled around and bulldozed by police. That is something that was heartbreaking. And I thought the city of Cape Town will have that conscience to say, we apologize to Parliament. But it seems as if they don't see anything wrong with the action they took against that man. Thank you.
Honorable Space.
Good morning, Chair. Good morning, colleagues, and good morning to the provincial government. Chair, I'm not going to put on, I'm just traveling in a remote area. Mine is not a follow-up. Mine is just an understanding, Chair, of the brief for this meeting. The brief for this meeting, if I'm correct, is the issues for consideration on the follow-up meeting with the province in with regards to the audit findings related to COVID-19. And Chair, I, with respect to my colleagues, I also understand the questions that are raised. Is this particular issues that we would want to, you know, do oversight on and would want more information on and content, I think we should arrange that for that purpose. And for instance, if we look at, you know, economic development strategies, the issues of homelessness, because I know there's a number of projects going, but I don't think that is what the brief was for this a delegation to come and brief us on. And now we are asking questions that's got nothing to do with the brief. And with all due respect, that is just all I wanted to raise, Chair, whilst I'm listening. Thank you.
Thank you. I'll then allow the leader of the delegation to organize the responses to the questions raised. And I think from there, we are almost about to wind up the engagement. So you can organize your people to respond to the issues that have been raised. Minister.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chair. Honourable Fraser's questions on industrialization. I'd just like to make it clear that there is no forced migration in the Western Cape. He asked about industrialization and special economic zones. He'll be pleased to know that we have two in the Western Cape. The first is the Saldanha Industrial Development Zone, which has just received a free port status. And we were very happy to have our partner from the Deputy Minister of the DTIC visiting us about 10 days ago in Saldanha Bay. We also have the Atlantis Special Economic Development Zone, which is focusing on green technologies. If the committee would like more information on these special purpose vehicles, we'd be happy to provide it. If you'd just let us know the specifics. Also in terms of Honourable Matumba and Honourable Spies' comments and questions, perhaps I could ask the committee to put questions in writing, which we'd be happy to respond to. Then I'd just like to check whether my colleagues in the Provincial Treasury would like to make any final inputs on those follow-up questions, as well as local government. And then I see Dr. Malila has also turned on his camera, so I think he'll make some comments as well. So let's start with you, Dr. Malila. Thank you.
Minister, thank you for that, and also thank you to the chair and to those that asked questions. Maybe just on the issue of homelessness. I mean, I want to report to this committee that this is a matter that we are taking serious. Obviously, the issues of around the regulations and all those things were, I mean, it's a massive stumbling block, particularly within the city of Cape Town and even in some of the other municipalities. We've had a couple of sessions already at cabinet level where we discussed as part of our well-being theme, because I mean, one of our priorities in this government, other than safety and the economy or jobs, is the issue around well-being. And having a roof over your having a roof over your head and not being homeless is part of the whole concept of well-being. So as a government, I mean, Chair, I want to indicate that the Premier is taking the issue serious. We're working closely with the city as well as the rest of the municipalities to obviously make sure that there's proper integration, you know, of these homeless people, firstly into communities, and then obviously if they can't integrate into their own communities, to make sure that at least you know, they have access to our many shelters in the province, and particularly in the metro. And I mean, from our Department of Social Development, we've got particular strategies of dealing with these shelters, both from a funding perspective, but also primarily from a well-being perspective, to know, you know, that people are okay, because ultimately it is about integrating, you know, these many homeless people back into their communities. So I just wanted to confirm, Chair, for the record, that we do have a strategy of dealing with people, you know, that are homeless at the moment. Thanks, Minister.
Thank you. Any final comments or additions from Provincial Treasury side? Mr. Savage, over to you.
Two matters, Chair. I mean, I think on the question of rural industrialization, I think the scope of work that the province and municipalities are doing in this regard is pretty broad. I mean, the underlying strategy is work with the assets of local communities and help them to build on those. So, for example, in areas of the Southern Cape and the Garden Route, tourism is a real has a lot of growth potential. Whereas in the Central Karoo, we may be working more with the agricultural industry, and the Department of Agriculture very active in that space, and also the renewable energy space is one that's got a lot of potential. But that means this is all based on quite deep economic analysis of what those assets are, what the comparative advantage of various areas of the province is, and what we need to do to unlock economic growth and job creation in those particular areas. I think that just the second question just to go back to the question of Section 32 of the MFMA, just to clarify that the key here is that that a committee of council has to investigate unauthorized, irregular, fruitless or wasteful expenditure and recommend to the council actions that should be taken in this regard. So this is important for the consequence management system and ensuring that the internal control system and the environment around that is strengthened. So from the Provincial Treasury side, we recommend that the MPAC is used as the committee for these investigations, because their main purpose is looking at governance and performance oversight. But some municipalities do have specific committees established in terms of Section 32 of the MFMA, and the Structures Amendment Act does provide for MPACs to be used to investigate these expenditures. Thank you.
Chairperson?
Yes.
I've not heard the question of the answer to the question of
the project of densification of Danone and Kosovo, which is still not completed to date. I've not heard anyone responding to that. I would suggest that rather than going to town, maybe we should just be pointed in answering the questions so that the questions do not escape us. Thank you very much. And in terms of Honorable Spies, we are quite prepared as to what to ask in this committee. We are not going to ask superficial questions as expected. We will hold the executive to account, which is our duty as legislators within the committee, Chair, with due respect. Thank you.
I suspect Honorable Preza, the team was still responding, so I'm not sure, but I think you have reminded them if there was nobody going to speak about their name.
Chair, can I come in?
Yes.
Okay, thanks very much. I want to quickly respond to Honorable Kaiser on Kosovo and Danone in particular. Again, I think that the sentiment of Honorable Spies is appropriate and correct, because me sitting here now, I won't be able to be in detail as to what is the progress of the work that needs to be done in Danone. But my fellow MECO member, Malu Siboy, who's responsible for human settlements and leading those projects in Danone and Kosovo, would be best person to respond to that. And that's why I say then I concur with that sentiment, because we'll end up guessing the answers, which is not what we want. What we want is to respond to the questions as accurate and as appropriately as possible, and they must be factual. But if then the questions are not what one was asked to come and account on, then it becomes difficult to give an accurate and appropriate answer. Hence, I concur also with MEC Merini to say, you know, a follow-up written question can be responded to. So therefore, Chair, with regards to Kosovo, there has been a study done that the city manager had requested to do. I've fortunately came across that study, because valuation and finance was part of that, so that's why I know that. The work has been completed, and then the human settlement would be dealing with the matter as asked by Honorable Preza, which I'm not privy to their project planning, preparation, and all of those things. Therefore, I cannot. But what I do know is that the matter of Danone has been looked at, study has been done, a report has been generated, and has been forwarded to the department responsible. And then also in terms of the very same committee, in terms of almost said Councillor Matumba, Honorable Matumba, the matter of a resident in Empolweni in Khayelitsha who was evicted and decided to strip and all of those things was dealt with by the very same committee. The city of Cape Town was summoned by the very same committee to deal with the matter. So for us now to come and say we apologize for the matter that has been dealt by the very same committee, I find that rather unusual. I mean, it has been dealt with extensively, and the questions were asked and the response were given to that. And lastly, to concur with the DG around the issue of homelessness, As I've indicated, the mayor is very passionate about solving the issue of homelessness. And also, Honorable Matumba, you can't force people to a home if they don't want to be in a home. There are many shelters and safe places. I know one is in town, and regularly, daily, by the way, we get a report as to how many vacant beds are available for people to utilize. And if people choose not to, you can't force them to. Neither can you force them to a house if they don't want to stay in a house. So it's a very delicate issue, but as I've indicated, the mayor is more privy to it, and the premier is very passionate about it, and we all want it to be solved. And indeed, if the homelessness people were to be able to use the safe spaces in town, it would make things much easier for everybody. Chair, I think from the city of Cape Town, that's about it. And if the CFO has anything to say as well, it's more than welcome to. Thank you.
I would suggest that we must have exhausted now all the issues that were raised. If there are any areas that require a follow-up, as was suggested by one of the members of the delegation, there will be a written follow-up question which would indicate what we expect. Now, can I allow the leader of the delegation, if there are any closing remarks you want to make?
Thank you very much, Chairperson. We're very grateful for the engagement today and for the questions posed. And we wish you all a pleasant day further. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We are also, as a committee, appreciative of this sharing of information first. I'm sure when we sit down, we'll be able to say there are a number of issues that we may not have been clear about, which you have helped to clarify. As already indicated, if there are any gaps, we'll formalize that and communicate with you. And I think as well, we are noting some of the comments as we proceed. In other words, it's not only yourselves who must improve on what you are doing. We also have to improve on what we are doing, doing oversight, following up on the laws that were passed, and seeing how you, how the communities, the public is engaged. So in other words, we will definitely be different as a committee before this experience of this sharing of information. Thank you very much, one, for coming, and two, for being open. And I'm sure there will be positive contribution. The meeting is adjourned. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you.
Recording stopped.
Thank you.